A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Ram, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on June 12, 1994, entitled A Profile of a Christian, Life of Barnabas. The scripture readings are Acts 11, verses 19 through 26, and 2 Corinthians 3, verses 1 through 3 and 17 through 18. The texts for the sermon are Acts 11, verses 24 through 26, and 2 Corinthians 3, verses 17 through 18. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
We come through the cycle of the Christian year, and we celebrate Pentecost, that day in which the Spirit of God is poured out on power, with power on the followers of Jesus. And that Jesus movement, which was called the People of the Way, begins its way on through the world. Trinity Sunday, the God who breathes, the God whose breath or spirit or wind is active in creation and who forms the world and also forms people. So that we come now finally today to think about how that breathing God, who was defined for us in the face of Jesus, this God who is revealed in Jesus, is a God who breathes on us and breathes through us and energizes us. This God whose breath is the life of the world is the God who also breathes through us, shaping us and forming us. Paul, in his letter to the Corinthians, tells them that they are letters of Christ, read by all people. He said, letters written, not with ink on paper, but letters written by the Spirit, the breath of God, and written on the fleshly tables of the heart. So he goes on in that passage to speak about the Christian beholding Jesus and becoming like Jesus. Contemplating the Lord, one becomes changed by degree into the likeness of the Lord. The Spirit involved in that, the Spirit of the Lord is the Spirit that gives liberty and shapes and forms. So today I want us to think for just a few moments about what it means to be Christian. What does it mean to live out this Christian life? What shape or what form does it take? And as I do that, I'm going to call your attention to the life of Barnabas. But before I do, let me make a couple of qualifications as we think about a profile of a Christian. Notice it is a profile, not the profile, because there is not one set form to which everyone must conform. God is a God who obviously loves diversity. And one of the worst things we can do to one another is force ourselves into a certain mold, a certain pigeonhole to say, now that's Christian. No, this is a profile of a Christian, recognizing that what we'll say from the life of Barnabas doesn't cover everything. But at least there are some hallmarks there that we can lift up. And then the second qualification I want to make is that this is a profile of a Christian, but the hallmarks that we lift up are not exclusively the possession of Christians. I heard a story one time, or read or heard in a sermon, or read a story of a Christian church in New York City whose sanctuary was burned. And down the street was a Jewish synagogue. And the rabbi came to the pastor and he said, since your sanctuary is destroyed and while it is being renovated, you are welcome to worship in our synagogue. And the pastor said to him, well, how very nice. That's a wonderful Christian thing for you to do. And the rabbi said, no, it's just a very Jewish thing to do. And I thought to myself, when I heard that, I mean, it's, you know, it's a simple little story, but when I heard that, I thought, how arrogant I am. How presumptuous I am. To think that everything that's good and noble and true is Christian. And I want to say at the beginning that I'm going to talk about some hallmarks of Christian life. But they're not exclusively ours. However, they are hallmarks that I see in one like Barnabas, who I believe was living in the flow of God's breath and being shaped after the image of Jesus. If there is one model, of course, it is Jesus. But again, Jesus is so many faceted that all of us only reflect a small piece. But let's look at Barnabas. His story is in the book of Acts. I read one passage this morning from the 11th chapter, but actually, if we go to the beginning, we'd have to go back to chapter 4. We're in the immediate wake of Pentecost, when that community was really a communistic community. It was a real commune. They really shared everyone according to his gifts, to everyone according to his needs. That's what really was happening there. Under the full impact of the Spirit of God, there was this mutual caring. No one had any need. Everyone took care of everybody else. And Barnabas, for Barnabas, it was no small matter. He was a wealthy estate owner in the Isle of Cyprus. And he sold his estate and brought in the proceeds to be used by that apostolic community. He became involved in the leadership of that movement, that early Jesus movement, which at this point was not a Christian movement, you'll understand, but was still within the pale of Judaism, trying to find out where in the world it was going and who in the world they were. And then Stephen was martyred, and persecution followed, and that Jerusalem community was scattered. But everywhere they went, they were like sparks of fire that began to flame wherever they found themselves. And at the beginning, it was a cautious movement. They took the gospel to Samaria, but they were half Jews. And then they began to go to some of the other cities of the Roman world, but they spoke to the Jews only because they were Jews. And they never gave it a second thought. They simply assumed that Jews were God's special people, and so to Jews they went, saying, "This Jesus was your Messiah." But then, how it happened, we don't know. Who they were, we don't know. That's the remarkable thing. The critical breakthrough happened by people whom we don't, from people that we don't know. They began actively to speak the gospel to Gentiles. This happened in Antioch, which was the third city of the Roman Empire. Rome, Alexandria, Antioch, north of Jerusalem. A major metropolitan center. And there, some of those who were scattered through the persecution began actively to witness to those who were non-Jewish. And miracle of miracles, they began to believe, and there was a community gathered there. Well, back at headquarters, they said, we better check this out. Because the Jerusalem core formed sort of that normative, tradition-setting, credentialing community of that early movement. And they sent Barnabas, who came and saw the grace of God in the lives of these Gentiles who believed in Jesus Christ, and he rejoiced. And he saw the possibility of a great world movement here. And he remembered a man named Paul. Originally, his name was Saul. He was the one who was going out from Jerusalem to Damascus to decimate the people of the way, you remember? And he saw this light from heaven and was knocked off his horse and was brought to a conviction that Jesus indeed was the Christ, the Messiah. And he began to witness, and when he came to Jerusalem, everyone was in fear and trembling because this was one who was decimating the church. And now they say he's converted, they say he's preaching Jesus, but how can you tell? Everyone's afraid of him except Barnabas. Barnabas goes to him and hears his story, and Barnabas believes him, and Barnabas gives him entree to the apostolic circle. And now, in this fresh situation in Antioch, Barnabas says, I know the person for this job. And he went to Tarsus, Paul's hometown, brought him to Antioch, and together they labored for a year in that congregation until it was a flourishing community. And then the Spirit of God said to the congregation, separate Paul and Barnabas for me and send them out. And the Christian world mission was begun. And at that point I can speak of the Christian world mission because it was in Antioch where they first brought the news of Jesus to non-Jews. It was in that community that the name Christian arose. It was used half mockingly. They were the Christ ones. But it became the name that stuck because these were the people of the way. They were the followers of Jesus, Jesus the Christ, Jesus the Anointed One. In fact, these people were anointed. Amazingly, as it happened with Cornelius, when the gospel was preached, God breathed, and they were moved by the breath of God, the wind of God, the Spirit of God. They were the anointed ones. They were the Christ ones. They were Christians. They were of Jesus, the Christ, the anointed one, the one who was breathed by God. And so, Paul and Barnabas, out into the Roman Empire to tell the good news. And they come back, and there's quite a development there, and they have to test whether or not that whole movement was authentic, and they go to the Jerusalem Council and so forth. But eventually, Paul says to Barnabas, let's go out again and visit the churches that we founded. And Barnabas says, fine, I'll call John Mark. Now, John Mark was Barnabas' cousin, and he had gone with him on the first journey, and he only lasted a week or two, and he deserted them and went back home. He missed his mother. I'm sure he missed his mother. She had a home in Jerusalem. And so he gave up the mission. Barnabas says, I'll call up John Mark. Paul says, no way. He started out with us the first time and he deserted us. Shame on him. I take him again. Shame on me. No way. Barnabas said, give him a chance. He said, no way. He said he was only a kid. No way. Barnabas said, if I go with John Mark. Paul said, then you go alone. And Paul called Silas. Now we've got two teams going out. That's the way denominations go, you know. Through the orderliness of people, you get a lot more going. Now, so he goes with John Mark, and that's about all we hear in the book of Acts of the story of Barnabas. He was a remarkable person. He was one of the great leaders, not only by what he accomplished, by what he foresaw, by his visionary leadership. He was able to move the people of the way, the followers of Jesus, into a worldwide movement. Good news being brought to the ends of the world, literally. As I think about Barnabas, there are just a lot of ways you could go with him. A lot of things one could say about him, but it seems to me that the first thing that underlies everything is that this man was a man who continued to be able to grow and was open to new experience. That is a remarkable quality. There's something about us human beings that we always want to shut down. We always want to bring closure. We feel uneasy being pilgrims on the way. We'd like to have it finished. We'd like to have the bottom line. We'd like to have the package tied up neatly with a bow. No loose ends dangling. Barnabas was a remarkable human being. Barnabas, first of all, as a Jewish believer, rooted in the Hebrew scriptures and traditions, was able to see that Jesus indeed was the Messiah, and he experienced the power of God in his life. And he opened up to that. Not just did he open up to it in the sense that he believed it was true, but he acted on it. He sold his farm. He saw the future. And he moved into it. He was one of vision, who continued to grow, staying open, staying flexible and free, not knowing where the wind of God would blow him next, but always ready. And this is demonstrated once again, because when this thing's happening in Antioch, whom do they send? Not Peter. It took a vision on the rooftop to get him even to go to Cornelius. Thank God they sent Barnabas. And Barnabas comes to Antioch, and here is a totally new situation. This is an impossibility. These are non-Jews. They've not been circumcised. They don't keep the food laws. They don't even know, they don't know anything about Moses and all of the traditions. How can they really be accepted as bona fide members of this spiritual movement of Jesus? Barnabas says, I can't really square it with, I can't square it with the Bible. But it's true. Barnabas was one of those that recognized that when the facts of life don't fit the faith, it's easier to change the faith. Can't change the facts. And blessed is the person who is able to stay open enough to honor human experience and to open one's mind to new possibilities and to see that that which was may not always be, and what has been said is not the last word, that human experience is a growing experience and that the gospel is interwoven into the historical movement so that it is a continuing movement that develops and grows with the expanding horizons of the human experience. Barnabas was quite a guy. If there hadn't been someone like that around, they might have shut Antioch down. And I want to tell you, if they had shut Antioch down, they would have shut the whole thing down, because it never would have come out of Jerusalem. You cannot trust Jerusalem. The action was not Jerusalem. Jerusalem acted in a supervisory capacity. They checked things out. They tested. They called councils. But the world movement started from Antioch. There was not vision and freedom enough at headquarters. First Church Jerusalem was stodgy and stuck fast. It was in Antioch that the Spirit found the openness and the freedom to blow to new possibilities. I like Barnabas. I like somebody has a vision and enough faith and courage to act on it. In the 11th chapter, it says he was a good man, full of the Holy Spirit and faith. I like him too because he got caught up in a movement that was larger than himself. He saw the possibilities of Antioch. He knew that's where the future lie. And therefore, he went after the best person he could find in order to make that work hum. He remembered Saul. He remembered his passion, his power, his fanatical zeal, his sharp mind. He said, "This is a work for none less than Paul." And when he brought Paul over to work with him, he worked with him side by side. But you know, any man is a fool who upstages himself by the person he calls to work with. Takes a lot of grace. One can never tell the grace it takes to play second fiddle well. I like Barnabas. He said, What's going on in Antioch is more than I can handle. I'm going to look for the strongest, most passionate, most powerful, most brilliant person I know. And I'm going to call that person and I'm going to work in his shadow. Because what is important is not my prestige and position, but that the gospel be brought to a hungry world, parched and longing for the water of life. Self-effacing. Concerned about the truth, about the larger picture, and willing to do what he had to do in order to make it happen. And maybe the nicest thing about him was he was full of grace. I already mentioned that on the one hand, when Paul came to town, now soundly converted, everybody was scared to death of him. And it was Barnabas that reached out to him. It was Barnabas that said, "Tell me your story." It was Barnabas that believed him. Do you believe people when they talk to you? Can you listen to someone's story of newness? Can you hear something that blows your mind and not immediately shut it down, turn it away? Barnabas had grace. He said, "Talk to me, Paul. Tell me what happened." He said, "That's really something. Come on, I want you to meet Peter." And then, of course, he works in Paul's shadow, and they go off on the missionary journeys, and when they're going on that second or third journey, he wants to bring John Mark along. And Paul says, "No way." Barnabas believed in the possibility of the second chance. He believed in giving someone a break. He didn't believe that because someone fails, he or she necessarily must be a failure. And so he took John Mark with him, and he nurtured him. And Paul went his separate way. He had a lot of grace. Paul finally got a little grace too. When he was old and in prison, he wrote a letter to Timothy and he said, "By the way, bring John Mark to me. He's profitable for me." And he mentions him very positively in the fourth chapter of his letter to the Colossians. And John Mark is most likely the guy that gives us the Gospel of Mark. See, what if Barnabas hadn't believed in him? What if Barnabas had not had enough grace to withstand the strong Paul to the face and say, "Nonetheless, the boy gets another shot"? I like that about him. Barnabas wasn't everything. But dear God, I wish the winds of God's Spirit would blow through me with such creative and energizing power that I'd have vision to see where things are going and the courage to act on it. The willingness to be self-effaced in the light of the larger movement and the grace to keep believing in my brothers and sisters as we go along together. That's not everything. But that would be a lot if we could more and more be shaped into Barnabas's, or maybe Jesus, by the Spirit of God.